Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about great books by lesser-known authors on the show today. Daniel Golden back with us. I always love to have him stop by. He owns Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, and it's always interesting to hear his recommendations. And today he has a list of 10 books for your summer reading list. You can join in with your suggestions or questions as well. Do you have a book to recommend? Would you like Daniel to suggest an author for you? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And I'd certainly love to hear from you. Daniel Golden, welcome back. Nice to have you with us. You know, it was before Christmas.
Yeah,
last time you were on, that was a long time ago. Oh man, how's Boswell Book Company been doing during this pandemic?
It's been a bit of a roller coaster. You know, we take every day as it comes. We are still doing sidewalk pickup and delivery, much as we've been able to do during since March. When we closed our doors for browsing on March 16th, we actually are installing some plastic barriers today. So I've been moving around trying to avoid noise. So just because, you know, I just want to make sure that when we open, that we are making everybody as safe as possible. So,
yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of demand for building those plastic barriers. So it took a little while for us.
Yeah. But, well, if you get those done, that's kind of a silver lining. Are there any silver linings for you?
What are silver linings? I mean, I think all of this has led me to, you know, appreciate, I think, you not to take things for granted. And, in terms of COVID, certainly there have been many sad losses. And I was just listening to WPR News and DR News and learning about some increase in rates. So, what I've always said is that books are a natural social distancing mechanism. So it's really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, you're reading by yourself for at least a while. I sort of push that because you can kind of go anywhere with the book in your head. So,
Here's me. You know, I read a lot of books, and the last couple of weeks, I read John Sanford's Masked Prey. I read John Grisham's Camino Winds. I read Lucy Foley, her book, The Hunting Party. But Lucy Foley probably is not as well known as John Grisham and John Sanford, certainly. But there are a lot of authors out there who you think really deserve to be read, who aren't being read as much.
Yeah, no, it was funny when I went through my list. It's usually, booksellers always like to tell people about the names they don't know about as well, partly because we figure you've probably read or at least made up your mind about the big authors. But I looked at this list and I saw, goodness, I don't think really anybody on my list has had, you know, many books out in the United States before. But they're all different kinds of books, and, you know, hope for something for anybody. We have that. If you like John Grisham, he actually wrote the cover quote for that book, The Coyotes of Carthage by Stephen Wright, that I had on our list. It's a wonderful book, and it's actually local, too. The author teaches at UW-Madison Law School and also in the creative writing program, and it's about a political operative who's kind of on his last chance. He's messed up his last assignment, and he's sent by his mentor to South Carolina to convince a town to basically sell the mining rights to the local mountain. If it reminds you of, there was a 1980s film that I really loved called Local Hero, by Bill Forsyth, if you remember that. I thought you might. It's got that sort of setup, but it's a very different tone because the gentleman whose name is Dre does not really make a lot of friends in the town. He's pretty much the only black guy in town. Everybody else is pretty white and conservative. He can't even do the groundwork himself, so he has to hire this evangelical couple to be his, like, front people. It's, you know, it's a thriller. It's a little, some people called it a satire a little. Some, it's definitely a literary novel. I actually visualized it as an espionage novel, like corporate espionage. It's got that sort of
feel to it.
Like a Le Carre or a John First, Alan First, in that it's very cerebral. It's a lot in his head. The language is beautiful, and also there's a lot of philosophy. You know, there's a lot of philosophical undertones and moral nuance. You know, this guy is not really wanting to. You know, he's got a good sense of what's right and wrong, but he has to do what he needs to do. His brother's dying of ALS, and he's lost his girlfriend, and, you know, he doesn't have – he's probably not horrible. He's also got a record, so, yeah. Anyway, I love the book. It's hard to classify, but it's just great.
Well, on your list, your 10 list, The Beauty in Breaking by Michelle Harper it's a doctor's memoir, really sounds interesting.
Oh, that's actually just, like, it's very fresh in my mind because it's the last book I finished. The book's not actually out for a couple of weeks, but one of the things that we're finding is that people are much more amenable about pre-ordering on independent bookstore websites, because we used to feel like if we talked about a book early, it would go somewhere else, you know, go to a, you know, people who are better at taking those orders than us, because we're kind of a little, you know, we're independent bookstores, but we have a nice website, and so most of the independent bookstores in the state of Wisconsin use the American Booksellers Association website, and so if you want to read The Beauty in Breaking by Michelle Harper, you can click on it. It is, right, it's a traditional doctor's memoir. We have a whole section of them. There used to be an old joke that the most popular book would be Lincoln's Doctor's Dog, because they those were like the three nonfiction categories that used to sell really well. But it's very rare to see, to have one of these books from the viewpoint of a woman, very rare from a person of color, a man of color, and pretty much unheard of for a black woman to be telling her story. She's an emergency room doctor in Philadelphia, and it's a series of essays that look at her upbringing, what led her to become a doctor, and also the things that she noticed as a doctor in the emergency room that maybe somebody else wouldn't. Like, for example, when they brought in, when the police bring in a gentleman accused of a drug crime, they ask the hospital to do medical tests on this man, and he refuses. And the doctor that she's training says, well, you have to do it. We're going to do it. And she says, oh, no, actually, if they don't have a court order, it's actually illegal for us to do that. And her trainee, you know, the person under her says, but all the other doctors have done it. And so they have to go to ethics. And it turns out that she's correct. And this is just the assumption that the white doctors made. And there are other stories like that. She came from a family where the father was abusive, and, you know, it's terrific. Beautiful. The writing's amazing. And it's that's the thing that's so great about it, is it's very much in that classic genre with a new voice, you know, making it a completely different perspective. So
yeah,
that's the beauty
for
in Breaking.
Sure. Well, let's have Susan and Madison join in. She has a recommendation for us, I believe. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Thank you. I would like people to read Arthur Furstenberg's The Invisible Rainbow. It is a factual history of electricity, radio frequency, and microwaves that have led to cell phones and the Internet and Wi-Fi, And talks about the tens of thousands of satellites going up into the sky right now that are untested for safety and health, for life on the planet and the planet itself, and I think that people should read it. Another book I read was Judy Mikovits, PhD. She's a virologist, and she wrote a book called Plague, and it's about her retrovirus research of HIV, chronic fatigue syndrome, and fibromyalgia, and it has many insights into the way the viruses in general work that are misunderstood by the public. Hmm. And she also published a book called, a second book called Plague of Corruption, which was released, I think, in March, and it is her whistleblower book on the way the CDC, NIAID, National Cancer Institute have been captured by Big Pharma.
Well, thanks for calling. Are you familiar with either any of those books, Daniel?
No, but they sound great. I was reminded of a book that we've been selling really well. I actually started it. I read it last year, but it actually was of great interest to folks in paperback and when in terms of COVID. And that was Matt Richtel's book, An Elegant Defense, The Story, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, because I think one of her books was touching on that. It's he's a New York Times writer, and it's a combination of memoir and immune system history. So we've actually had a lot of people reading that in paperback. So it's possible that the caller might find that of interest.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we've hit two of your books. Let's go one more, and then we'll go back to the phones. The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett.
Well, that's the one book on my list that is like a huge hit. And her first book, The Mothers, which I loved, was also hit the New York Times, but kind of the bottom numbers of it. And this book had a few things going for it. First of all, it was one of the big book clubs, and all these Reese Witherspoon, Oprah's taken new life. Both this the Today Show and Good Morning America all have book clubs, and I think a lot of people. One of the things when you can't browse are responding to media to kind of drive sales. We're finding that hardcover fiction is selling better than paperbacks because paperbacks often sold when people went in a store and browsed. So this book, Vanishing Half, kind of exploded. Number one New York Times bestseller. It's out of stock everywhere. And it's so good. It's the story of two identical twins who live in a small town in Georgia, and they run away when they're teenagers because their mom wants them to be domestic work to help bring money into the family and leave school and do domestic work. Yikes. So they run to New Orleans. Actually, they're not in Georgia. They're in Louisiana. Sorry about that. One of them winds up marrying this guy, divorcing, and coming home with her child, while the other one disappears. The thing about this town is it's almost all black people in the town, but they're very sensitive about color, and there's a lot of colorism, which is something. So they're focused on light-skinnedness, and these two girls are so light-skinned that one of them is actually able to pass as a white person. And so years later, they really don't see each other again. They disappear. And years later, though, their daughters wind up inadvertently coming together in Los Angeles. It's got a bit of a soap opera-ness of it, and she plays with that. She plays with the drama because the woman, the daughter, the grand, who's the, one of the cousins, is actually has an acting gig on a soap opera. So the story is great. The characters are terrific. The plot is interesting, and people are just are loving Britt Bennett's book. I'm so excited to see an author develop like this, much as I love the first book. A lot of people are loving the second book even more, and who knows where she's going to go from here. So Britt Bennett's Vanishing Half. You got to back order it, though.
Daniel Golden, owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, go to boswellbooks.com and take a look at his operation. Great to have him with us as we talk great summer reads. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking about great summer reads from, well, we've talked about less known authors, but we've also talked about some pretty well-known ones as well with Daniel Golden, owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. Barbie in Washburn has a recommendation for us. Let's go there. Hi, Barbie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and good morning. I have a great new book to recommend. It's brand new. It is out. It's just been released, and it's called Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters. Now, I turned you on late. I hope I'm not repeating what somebody else said. But it's called Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters, and it's nonfiction. It's all about Mary Todd Lincoln and her life from birth till death, everything. It's the most fascinating read. I learned so much about the Lincolns, I couldn't believe it. But I recommend that book highly, Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters. And the author is
Jennifer Cheverini.
Yeah.
Jennifer Cheverini. I interviewed her on the show. It is. I agree with you. It's a great book. And I interviewed her. So you might want to go back. Go to WPR.org/Larry. If you didn't hear that interview, I had a great interview with her a week or two ago. But I don't know what. Thank you for that. Daniel, what do you think of it?
Oh, she's just terrific, isn't she? And I always like to give a shout out for Resistance Women, which just came in paperback, which has a Wisconsin connection because Mildred Fish Harnack actually was born in Milwaukee and went to UW-Madison. And she has written a World War II story of resistance against the Nazis. She's just such a good historical fiction writer because she really goes for the source material. Like, she's reading newspapers and, you know, and some people are play a little loose with facts. She'll tell you if she's made something up, but for the most part, she's you really can learn things from her, her books.
I'm with Barbie on that. I learned a whole lot about the Todd family, that I didn't know and found extremely interesting. So, Barbie, thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. By the way, I want to just go back to John Grisham for a minute because he had two Camino books he's published. The second, first was Camino Run. The second was Camino Wins. But they were, one of the main characters in Camino Wins owns an independent bookstore owner.
I know. It's so much fun. they're a little different. They're kind of caper books, I guess you would say, instead of thrillers. So they've got that sort of fun summer. But, you know, publishers are really, really publishing for summer. And I guess they always did, but I guess I wasn't really noticing how aggressively the tone changes around May, June for a lot of books. You know, you've got his books. You've got, right now, Ellen Hildenbrand, number one with 38 Summers, she's got a book every year that's always set in a beach. There's James Patterson's Summer House. You had a big, Jennifer Weiner book, Big Summer. I do give a shout out to, Christy Clancy, who, Madison, author who used to live in Milwaukee for her debut, The Second Home, which is about a summer house in Cape Cod, and what happens when the parents die and the children are fighting over the book. One of my friends who is living in Cape Cod right now just was texting me because I sent her a book, of course, and she was telling me how much she loved it, and especially as my sister-in-law, too, when they get to the point where we got a shout-out in the book, like they go to Boswell, and so everybody, like as soon as I get it, I get this – like as soon as they get to that page, they send me a note going, Boswell, Boswell, Boswell. But it's very much of a summer novel. They a lot of books got delayed for COVID because they were so worried that stores were closed. They weren't seeing a lot of sales. Amazon actually kind of played down their book sales because they had so many things that they had to, they couldn't get everything else out the door. But these kind of summer reading books, well, they're just not going to work in September.
Well, you're I just wondered because I thought I was thinking of you as I read that book, and he sort of goes into what it's like to be an independent bookseller, and I thought to myself, I wonder if Daniel would agree with generally what he talked about.
He knows a lot of stores. It's funny, he's not really, he stopped touring for many years. And one of the things about the Camino books is he decided to start visiting independent bookstores for it again. And so, but he's always had about five or six stores that he always went and signed books for. And this sometimes could make or break their year. They were the stores that said okay to him when he did his tour for the book he self-published, like A Time to Kill, like many, many years ago.
Oh.
Like he stayed loyal to those stores. There was one in Memphis and one in, I think, Square Books. And, there are just a few stores around the country that would get his books. So he's known those stores. He's always signed books with them, and he knows them pretty well. I kind of trust that he's probably on target.
Lee in St. Charles, Minnesota, let's give you a chance. What have you got to recommend?
It's been out a while. Matterhorn by Carl Marlantes. It's about Marines' offensive in the Ashaw Valley, and I think it really points out, I've tried to read a lot of Vietnam literature, and how the race was a problem over there, and then how officers would sacrifice their men just to promote their careers. So I thought that was real well done, and I guess I'm prejudiced because that's right where I was. So.
Oh, Matterhorn. No. Wow, Lee,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, it's about 10 years old now, but it's a wonderful book.
Thank you so much. And let's get Susan on from Fort Atkinson. Susan, hi.
Hi. I wanted to recommend an unusual book called Dancing Bears. It is in Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, for generations leading up to the fall of communism. And it shows parallels between the bears in captivity and forced to perform, being held by their captors, and communists under communism, and what happens in each case when they're set free. Some of the people under communism would prefer it because they don't know what to do with freedom, and it's the same with these bears. Some of them resort to performing again. So the parallels between what happens with people who are no longer under communism, what to do with themselves, and the same thing with the bears when they're set free in the forest. And it even takes a long time for them to learn to hibernate again and do things that bears should do.
Well, thank you for that. I did not know that book. Daniel, and it's called Dancing Bears. Daniel, comment?
Well, it is one of the things that people should know is it's not a novel. It's actually a true story. I'm assuming it was probably translated from Bulgarian, maybe. But actually, all the reviews on it have been terrific. It does look, it really sounds fascinating. I'm always interested. I've read a couple of novels set in Eastern Europe recently. I actually, though, if I may, does tie into a book on my list pretty well in terms of the parallels between animals and humans. One of my super sleepers on the list, meaning nobody's even paying attention to it, is a book called The Story of a Goat by Perumal Murugan. He is a Tamil Nadu writer, which is one of the in India, and it is the story of this couple whose fortunes increase and then decrease, but the story is completely told from the perspective of Punachi, their goat. And this goat is an amazing, amazing, amazing character. She has to go through everything from violence and sexual assault to romance to friendship. And it's a tough book. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like it's going to be like Watership Down, but I wouldn't really have a kid read this book because it's all the stuff that she goes through is tough. But it's also, of course, an allegory about life in India and Modi. And his last book, One Part Woman, was a huge he's super popular in India. His last book actually came under fire because he talked about a ritual that is not well liked, and he actually wound up being under house arrest, and the book went to the highest court, and the court exonerated him. So he said he wasn't going to write again. I mean, it's just crazy all over the place. But this book is just it's a unique experience, and I really enjoyed it a lot, and I just love the cover because I'm always I love animal covers. And I like when, like, the animal is kind of staring at you. This is a bit of a play on that, but very captivating. Captivating book, captivating cover.
So. And Susan, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. We had an email at ideas@wpr.org. Jerome had called to recommend The Half Has Never Been Told, Slavery and the Making of American Capitalism by Edward Baptiste. You familiar?
Oh, and we have been selling, needless to say, so many books about American history and our legacy of slavery. And I don't know that book, but obviously I better go look it up. There's been so much wonderful books coming out. One of the books that has seen a big resurgence is Isabel Wilkerson's The Warmth of Other Suns, The Epic Story of the Great Migration, which of course is the legacy of slavery. And she has a new book coming out, which I haven't read yet. I haven't seen anything on it except that I know it's going to be very big, called Cast, The Origins of Our Discontents. It's looking at America in a slightly different way, sort of using the Indian caste system as a comparison. So, the book I'm interested in Bill Collar's book as well.
Cole called to recommend I Know This Much Is True by Wally Lamb.
Oh, yes, a great classic. Yeah, I don't really know when Wally Lamb will have it's been a while since his last book. I'm trying to think of what, there's so many books I would recommend to somebody who liked Wally Lamb. I'm trying to think if there's something on my list that would kind of match up. No.
Well, let's talk about another one on your list, How We Fight for Our Lives by Saeed Jones.
Yes, that's right. So that's a memoir. It's been out since last year, but I put it on the list because the paperback's coming in a couple of weeks. I'm giving a shout out for paperbacks. I'm very worried about the format. They're not the paperback. Because of the anti-racism, books have had a resurgence, and a lot of them are in paperback. But I feel like in general, as I said, we can see it from the way that we get orders online. They just don't, the books aren't popping as well. And even book clubs, which used to be the mainstay of paperback business, like all the big book clubs that I mentioned before, they're all choosing new hardcovers because they don't want to be the last person to recommend a book. So this is also interesting because they just announced the Lambda Literary Awards, and it was a particularly good list of winners. And I'd actually read both so this is for an LGBT award, and two of the winners for lesbian fiction was a book called Patsy, which I really liked, which was also one of the big book club books. And the gay fiction was called Lot by Brian Washington, which is connected short story set in Houston. It's really great. But I actually went with the memoir. This is the story of a young man who grows up between his grandmother and his mother. His grandmother is a conservative Christian in Memphis area, and his mom is actually Buddhist, and they live in Dallas. So this, you know, he's also coming to terms with the fact that he is gay, And he also must confront racial issues the way every black person must. And so he looks at cases like Matthew Shepard and of police brutality of black people. And as he tells this very poetic story told through vignettes of traveling between the worlds of his mother, his grandmother, and himself. Really a beautiful poetic book that is also very powerful. And I read a lot of, obviously I read a lot of fiction, and I do really love memoirs, which are nonfiction, but they're a different kind of nonfiction than history or, how should one say, they're not so platform. They're still, they sort of blend fiction and storytelling, even though they're true. In fact, in Europe, often memoirs are shelved with fiction. So, you know, a lot of people have to change names and stuff when they write memoirs because, especially if they're still alive, you might get sued, you know.
Everywhere You Don't Belong by Gabrielle Bump is another book you're recommending.
Yes. Now that's fiction, but I'm sure that there's probably some elements of the story taken from his own life. It's a coming of age story about a Claude McKay love who grows up in the South Shore neighborhood of Chicago, which was on the South Side, was a more of a middle class neighborhood that has still fallen on hard times. He is in high school. His parents have had a bitter divorce. He winds up living with his grandparents. He's caught between, he's a kind of a nerdy kid who kind of gets caught between the gang violence of Chicago and also the police presence. It comes to a head when there's a killing. He tries to outrun it. He gets to go to college, but he can't the trouble follows him from Chicago to his university. It's a wonderful book. We're hosting, I haven't been really talking about events, but this is one where we are. We were supposed to have an event in March. It was our second event to be canceled, you know, because it was like that week where everything, we just like had this packed schedule and like one by one the dominoes fell with good reason, but it's still sad.
Yeah.
But we've been slowly doing some of them as virtual events. And I have this really great partnership with a group called Access. And we have two folks doing the conversation. They're all on Zoom. You register them on our website. There's a link. And so far, we only had one ticketed event. Almost all, 99% have been free. And he's going to be in conversation with two local folks, educators, Nassif Rogers and Channa Lucas, and they're both also from the South Side of Chicago. They both really love the book. This is what I love putting together when, you know, like you can just pass that love of a book from one person to another, and there's nothing better than when someone like emails me back or calls me, or I guess I see them when I'm all messed up handing them a book or something like that, and they say, you told me to read this, and I really loved it, and that's why you do what you do.
Oh, man. So go to boswellbooks.com, that page, and that will let us know the events that you have, this one and other events that you may have scheduled.
Yes. Yeah. We're not doing quite as many as there's still a lot of work virtually, but we're trying to get 2 to 3 a week going and also support other people's programs like co-sponsoring. So,
well, tell me about another book you had on your list, If I Had Two Wings, Randall Kenan?
Yes. So I guess I kind of am in love with the backstory of this book as much as the book itself. I was trying to look for a collection of short stories, and my coworker Chris is an avid reader. It's not rabid, really. And we share a lot of books. He actually convinced me to read that Coyotes of Carthage too. And so he read this book, If I Had Two Wings, and he said, these are classic short stories. I think you're going to really like them. And I said, Randall Kenan, I read, and I think I was home for something. And so I sent him a photo of Randall Keenan's first collection of stories. This is his second that was published 28 years ago, which I still had in hardcover. So I was sort of thrilled. They're sort of centered on a town, a small town in North Carolina, and they, though a lot of the characters sort of travel outside that zone. One story is about a gentleman in the 1980s who, he never says his name, but you can tell by the end of the story that he has somehow become under the orbit of Billy Idol, the pop star from that time. Another story is about a woman who is asked by Howard Hughes to be his cook with this because it reminds him of her mother who worked for him and quit many years ago. There's a sort of a story about a woman who is in her 60s. Her church has fallen apart. She joins this mega church, and somehow she inadvertently has the powers of healing. And she doesn't really want to do it, but the church really, really, really wants her to do some serious healing. So the stories kind of, they're not connected, only, you know, they're just all written by a great writer. He's at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And one of the things that was really exciting to me was I just mentioned it in passing, and one of our great area residents, Kim Soar, who runs Red Oak Writing, which is helps writers with roundtables and puts together programs and stuff like that. She wrote to me and she said, "Who's my writing teacher?" So I love that. So if something comes together with that, we'll probably include Kim in that. So I love connections and coincidences and things. So it's just classic short stories.
Well, let's go to Crooked Hallelujah by Kelly Jo Ford.
A little. So this is, Randall Keenan is a grand master. You know, he's been around, you know, he's teaching and things like that. This is Kelly Jo Ford's first book. She's another person that I sort of met. We meet a lot of authors at bookseller conferences. They want us, they're basically, you know, charm us and say, you're going to, you know, you hear other people talking about a book and they convince you to read it. Because as I said, these are not big names. These are not people you know. So they have to figure out how to convince us, because there's so many books out there, to read this book. So I went to the conference. I ran into her the first day. I'm sure everyone has these sort of things when they go to a conference, if they've gone to a conference, like you run into somebody and then you just keep running into them again and again. Like you don't see all the other people you know, or maybe you see them once, but this person is like there all the time. Well, that was Kelly Jo Ford. And I said, well, I guess I better read this book. And the really exciting thing was the book was just as good as the person. It's set in mostly in Oklahoma on the Cherokee. It's three generations of Cherokee women, and the grandmother, who is pretty conservative religiously, the daughter, who is a rebel and has a child really young, and then her daughter, who kind of rebels against her mother. And the stories jump around in generations. It definitely has a feeling of stories. There's a couple of outlier stories of other characters that are only tangential, but they really add to the beauty of it. I'm always really excited about young Native American writers, just because there's a lot of poets, but we're only beginning to see more novelists. And I really think this book's coming officially out on July 14th. You know, one of those weird things about the inside of publishing is that some publishers, when they say July 14th, they mean July 14th. You're not getting the book on July 13th. And then some people, it comes when it comes. And so this book might be around a little before that. I love the characters. I love the writing. The weather is such an important part of the book. I mean, I just read a book called Boomtown, which actually I bought because I heard him on Wisconsin Public Radio with Doug Gordon about the history of Oklahoma City, and they talk about the crazy weather stuff, and this book has everything: floods, fires, tornadoes, and how this environmentally impacts not just the land but the people on the land too.
Man, book. Well, back to Crooked Hallelujah for a minute. I think Jill Nadeau is listening in here. Jill, we should try and see if we can get Kelly Jo Ford on the show, the publication.
Oh, I can definitely help you with that.
That would, I think that'd be a fun, an interesting guest and fun topic. Well, Lakewood by Megan Giddings. That's another book you found when you were at your winter booksellers conference.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot of, you know, it's true. Another debut author. And this book's a little different. It's set in Michigan, and it's about a young woman, her mother, her grandma, it's generations of women, so there's some thematic similarities. The grandmother's died, her mother is disabled, and she puts off college, I think that came up too, and Britt Bennett, and signs up for this psychological experiment. So she's sent to this small town in Michigan, where she's put in a fake office to do fake tasks, but every so often they have to fill out these surveys. And the more she's there, the weirder it gets. She doesn't really know who's actually in on the experiment, who's a subject and who's part of it. It'll remind you of some of the stories about psychological experiments gone awry. Some stuff is psychological and some of it is physical, and there's some actual violence in the book, and we don't really know. So it'll remind people of, like, the Tuskegee experiments. She befriends someone, but she doesn't really know, you know, if he's a friend or not. I actually call this, like, psychological horror. But at the same time, it's definitely a coming-of-age story. It's about a black woman navigating a predominantly white community. And it's very well written. It's quiet. So when I say horror, I don't really mean Stephen King horror. If you think about Jordan Peele's Get Out, or Friday, there's a book called Friday Black, which is really wonderful, that sort of looks at, uses the genre of horror to kind of look at racial issues. It's not werewolves and vampires and things like that, but it's disturbing nonetheless. So, big fan.
Oh man. So that's Lakewood, the book. And We Ride Upon Sticks by Quan Berry.
Oh boy, I just can't let this book go. This book came out this spring. It's another event that we had canceled. We were so looking forward to it. And then this is one of the early, you know, we had so many people read this in the store. This is one of the earlier ones I tried virtually. Barry actually teaches at University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's a professor of English, and she's been known for her books of poetry. She had actually a first novel that was sort of magical realism, very poetic. You could see, like, the poetry background. This book is a complete 180 in terms of tone. It's funny and set in 1989 Danvers, Massachusetts, which is where she grew up. And it focuses on the field hockey team and how they are a terrible, terrible field hockey team, losing game after game. And then one of them gets the idea to do a witch's book. They sign their name in it, and then they start winning games. And the thing that's interesting about this book is it's 11 people on the team, 11 chapters, each one from a different – that focuses on a different person, which matches up with the matches. And she looks at things like race and class and gender through this lens. It's funny. It's very 1980s. There's a lot of big hair. And the thing you should know about Danvers is that's actually the town where the Salem witches came from. It was actually called, like, Salem Fields or something like that. I've got that wrong. But so I really thought it was fascinating. It has the sense of a John Hughes movie, but with the problematic elements updated. So if you like, you know, like, so what I'm thinking – Breakfast Club, especially, or 16 Candles, mostly Breakfast Club. But because it has those, like, each character has a different sort of personality, strong personality, and they wind up having to be together. We just love this book. We can't stop selling it. It hasn't really exploded nationally. And I think partly that's, you know, sometimes one bad review, it's gotten really good reviews, but I thought the New York Times review is a little mixed. I thought they didn't get it. And poo on them. That's all I have to say.
Well, on that note, poo on them, Daniel Golden. It's always such a joy to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being with us. I'll look forward to your next visit for sure. I hope you'll be with us again.
Thank you so much. Next time, maybe in Madison. Who's to say?
I hope so. Daniel, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Bye.
Daniel Golden is the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, and he's still doing two or three virtual, I don't want to call them shows, but guest appearances from authors that you can go online. You can also go online to, of course, purchase books from them at boswellbooks.com. Well, coming up... you know, we had a pretty volatile year. We're going to be talking about how this is affecting children and their families next with our guests, Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.